Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to a brand new week of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, alongside Travis Anderson. And Travis, we got so much to talk to. Again, with it being a brand new week, and we took Friday off. NFL draft recap, the Utah Jazz are now down 1-0. When it's last time we were live on air, they were going toe-to-toe with the Thunder. Since then, they've won that series, and again, they're down 1-0 right now to the Houston Rockets. The second round is set in the NBA. Boy, there's a lot to get to.
Yeah, we got to get going. So, not an hour is probably not enough today to get what we need to get done.
No, probably not. And, of course, on the local sports track, the Carbon Dinos pick up the region championship of the baseball diamond as well. We're going to talk about that a little bit today. Later on in the week, we'll catch up with Coach Jeff Cincinnatus. And we get down to the final week of the regular season for Emory baseball as well. State tournament begins this Saturday.
Went by quick, didn't it?
Well, I've always said this about spring sports. Winter sports, fall sports, we get a good 3-4 months. Spring, here's 2 months. Cram it all into 1 year. I mean, that's basically what we have. It starts at the beginning towards the beginning of March and ends at the beginning of May. So you just don't have a whole lot of time as far as the local sports front goes in the spring season. But we'll talk about all that and a little bit more today. Plus, it is Monday, so we'll be joined by Bill Lasky as we talk baseball. It's an odd time for baseball, okay? Because you have the excitement of opening day, and it takes roughly 50 to 60 games for us to figure out just what a team is going to be. And we're not quite there yet, so newness is kind of wearing off the new season. Baseball starts flowing into the back of people's minds because you have the NBA playoffs. We have the Kentucky Derby coming up. I mean, there's all these events coming up. And I think baseball kind of just drifts into the back of the minds of people because we have it all summer long. NFL draft was this past weekend, but there's a lot of great storylines in baseball as well.
Yeah, the Yankees are on fire right now. 9 straight wins, 18-9. The Red Sox are 20-7. The Astros are there at 19-10. Then you got two teams just hanging around with the Angels and Blue Jays. So you're starting to see the teams that are going to contend. And right now you got the Red Sox, Yankees, and Astros. Those are the three best teams in baseball.
The AL East will be determined by the Yankees and the Red Sox. There's no question.
No doubt. And right now the Yankees are just, like you said, 9 straight on fire.
And that was kind of the streak that the Red Sox went on, got bit by the injury bug a little bit. So now I'm really looking forward to see the way the AL East unfolds. So again, we'll talk to Bill Lasky about that. The next segment, he's going to join us to talk some Major League Baseball. Let's look at the schedule in the NBA tonight. We have one game. We get Philly at Boston. Your thoughts on this series?
I like the Sixers. I think the Sixers win this series in six. I think they're just better overall.
Better overall when the Celtics do not have Kyrie or Gordon Hayward, obviously.
Yeah, more talent on Philadelphia side right now than Boston side.
If Boston had either Hayward or Kyrie, I would go with Boston.
Yeah.
Being down both those individuals, I agree with you. Now, yesterday we did have a game 7 of the first round. The Cavaliers got the best of the Indiana Pacers. Am I wrong for saying that as I watched this series, and I watched every game of this series, that Indiana's better than Cleveland?
No, Indiana was the better team. They gave it away. They gave away game four at home.
Yep.
They gave game 5 on the road up when LeBron hit the shot at the buzzer. So I thought Indiana was the better team. They just gave that series away.
And LeBron is the best player in the world. And because of that, Cleveland lives to fight another day. Now, they get Toronto tomorrow. Again, we only have one game tonight. Tomorrow, it's Cleveland and Toronto. Raptors win that series?
I am going to take Cleveland. I think the Cavaliers win that series. Toronto, to me, I don't know. There's something about the match with Cleveland. They just I don't get, like, why they can't compete with Cleveland and beat Cleveland. We've seen it in the regular season where they blew out a 25-point lead in one of the games, and I'm going to take Cleveland.
I'm going to go with Toronto. The reason I take Toronto in that series is because of the backcourt.
Love their backcourt.
I don't think Cleveland has an answer for DeRozan and Lowry. I really don't. LeBron, again, best player in the world. How many miles does he have left on his body this season? Not career-wise, but this season.
They're going to have to end this series quick, yes, against the Raptors if they want any chance of advancing to the finals. So the longer it drags out, I mean, they're going to get snake bit maybe in the Eastern Conference Finals by Philadelphia.
I don't like Cleveland's chances in game one.
No, short turnaround. We've seen that with Utah yesterday.
Right, and I think that was a problem for the Jazz. That Rockets-Jazz series, which we'll talk about a little bit later on in the show, it's nowhere near being done. Okay, I really think that the Jazz have a chance in this series. Throw game one out. The Jazz were never going to win game one.
No.
Jazz need to win game three and four. That's what the Jazz need. If you still wanted the first two, great. You need to focus on winning games three and four. I don't think Cleveland will win game one. Again, their focus should be game two. And the reason I say that is because all you got to do is still home court advantage, especially when you're coming off of a late. The Jazz played at what? Played at like 9, or they played at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, they had like an 8:30 tip on Friday, and then you have that game going, what, to midnight, then you turn around and have to go to Houston on a Sunday. So it was blowout written all over it.
Yeah,
it
just was not a good look for the
Utah
Jazz.
And one thing about LeBron, can he stop with the flopping and all that other crap?
Is that not terrible?
He's so good that he doesn't need to do the flopping and grabbing the back of his head when he falls to the ground like he got like touched. It's nonsense.
I know this is turning into kind of a round table discussion about the NBA, but no, I'm with you because, look, once upon a time, the guy that, at least this is how I remember it, the guy that brought flopping into the NBA was Vlade Divac. Mm-hmm. Vlade was the man when it comes to flopping. And this goes back to his days with the Lakers before he left and went to Charlotte. And then you go on to the next day, as, you know, era in his career when he was with Sacramento. Vlade was the guy that kind of invented flopping. At least that's the first that I remember. Referees were aware that Vlade was a flopper, yep, especially later on in his career. And he did not get nearly as many calls flopping. You cannot tell me that at this stage in LeBron James' career, the officials are not fully aware that this guy flops. They're blatant flops. He flopped multiple times in the NBA Finals over the course of the last 3 years, and it actually changed the series multiple times.
It did.
And it did again in this series. Now, again, I think Indiana's the better team.
I do, too.
I think LeBron's the best player in the world, and the reason why Cleveland beat Indiana wasn't necessarily because of the flopping. There were some questionable calls in the series, but that's going to be in any
NBA. The one on Miles Turner was absolute garbage.
Terrible.
It was garbage.
And the one you're talking about, that his sixth foul, is that,
yep,
is this
that's
the one.
You're
talking
about? That was terrible.
Okay. On that particular play, Turner comes down with a rebound. He goes in for a dunk. It would have been a three-point game.
Yeah.
Instead, a foul is called on Turner. That sends Cleveland to the line to shoot two because it was a loose ball foul. And the lead goes from potentially three all the way to seven. And at that stage in the game, Indiana loses one of their best post players. The lead now goes to a solid three-possession game instead of a one-possession game. Steals momentum. The crowd was electric. And that was it. And it was based off flopping. It was.
Yeah, we had everything from LeBron yesterday. Brilliance, flopping, cramps, everything you expect from LeBron. And that's just the other stuff he just doesn't need to do. I just don't get why he continues to do it.
Best player in the world.
He's awesome. He's awesome.
Pathological flopper.
Yeah, it's just...
I guess we could use
that. I mean,
that
he went 10 rows down the center of the court yesterday on that one play.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. Let's take a look at the schedule in Major League Baseball because, again, plenty of action in baseball just never stops at this time of the year. And we will begin at the 4:10. So here in just a couple of minutes, the Rangers and the Indians we'll start things off. This one is taking place in Cleveland. The Rangers 11-18, not so great. The Indians 14-12, playing better. We have the Rockies and the Cubs at 5 o'clock. The Pirates and the Nats also in the 5 o'clock hour. Rays at the Tigers. The Reds will play host to the Brewers. We get the Royals and the Red Sox. Phillies at Miami. 6 o'clock hour. Toronto will take on Minnesota. We get the Yankees at the Astros. Love this matchup. Sonny Gray on the mound going up against Charlie Morton. Morton has been so good. 3-0 with a 1.8 ERA for the Astros. Houston's 19-10. I think they're the best team in baseball, but a lot of it has to do with their pitching staff. Morton doesn't necessarily get the praise, but he's been great.
Yeah, their pitching staff, 1-5, is going to be tough to beat as you get into the postseason and the series, you know, shorten up.
Important series in the National League West. The Dodgers, who are struggling at 12-5, travel to meet the Diamondbacks tonight. 7:40 start time there. Zach Greinke is on the bump for the Diamondbacks. And in the nightcap, it's the Padres and the Giants. The Shark, Jeff Samardzija, will take the ball for the Giants. The Padres, who have been fun to watch at this point in time, just 10-19, but a lot of young talent on that squad. I think that they're going to be very good here in the next couple of years.
Yeah, you see it with the Padres and another team. Atlanta has a bunch of young talent. So those two teams are up and coming.
We're going to talk more Major League Baseball here in just a moment. And again, we're going to be joined by Bill Lasky. But Local Sports Roundup is coming up here in just a moment on Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And we will begin on the high school baseball field, where Friday evening the Carbon Dinos clinched the Region 14 championship as they defeated the Juab Wasps 6-3 on the road in Nephi. Playing for the region championship, the Dinos got off to a great start. They scored four runs in the first two innings in the wire-to-wire win. Carbon was led throughout the contest by starting pitcher Cody Lowe, who gave up two earned runs to earn the victory. Lowe improved to 6-0 on the mound this year with the win, allowing just five hits while striking out nine in the dominating performance. Throughout the day, the Dinos were led at the plate by 11 hits, four of which came from Zach Bradley. Cody Lowe finished with two to go along with an RBI. Braxton Bennett led the team in RBIs with two. Now, the win means Carbon will enter the state championship tournament as the number one seed from Region 14. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We'll talk more Carbon High School baseball in the coming days. Now, we stick with high school baseball, but we move over to Emory High. And the Spartans participated in their final home contest of the year on Friday as they took down the North Sevier Wolves 7-2 in a non-region tilt. Emory trailed 2-0 at the end of the first inning, but fired back with four runs of their own. They added three more in the sixth to pick up the 7-2 win. The Spartans in the contest were led at the plate by Colton Wilson. He finished with two RBIs in his final home game in a baseball uniform. Coda Alton continued his hot streak at the plate. He also added two RBIs. As far as pitching goes, Alton was also rewarded with a win. He pitched four innings, gave up one hit, no earned runs, and struck out eight. Easton Gordon pitched three innings. He allowed just two hits, no earned runs. He also struck out eight. The Spartans will wrap up the regular season this week as they take on the Richfield Wildcats. A contest will take place tomorrow on the road. We move over to soccer, and the state championship tournament bracket is set as both Carbon and Emory will represent in the season-ending tournament. Now, the Spartans will enter the number one seed from the Region 15 ranks after claiming the league crown. They will take on Union this Thursday. This contest will take place at Emory High School. And the Carbon Dinos will enter the number two seed from Region 14. They, too, will play on Thursday, and they'll play host to the Richfield Wildcats. Start time for both games are set for 4 p.m. If Emory beats Union, they'll move on to take on either ALA or Summit Academy. A Carbon win means they would meet Morgan or Grant in the second round. Both Carbon and Emory could be on a collision course to go toe-to-toe with one another. Emory is the only one seed in the lower half of the bracket. Carbon and Morgan are the only two number two seeds. That means that if Emory and Carbon win their first two games, the two squads would meet for a chance to go to the state championship. We move over to junior college athletics, and the USU Eastern women's softball team now sits 18-18 in conference play after they earned a four-game split with the College of Southern Idaho at home over the weekend. The Lady Eagles won the first of four games on Friday by a final score of 3-2 and fired back with a win in the exact same score, 3-2. Now on Saturday, CSI earned a two-game sweep, defeating USU Eastern 11-0 and then 15-7, but the damage was done, and USU Eastern earned two wins. Now they seem to be playing their best softball of the year, and they'll wrap up the regular season this weekend as they play host to Snow College. That'll be Friday and Saturday. And we move over to baseball, where the USU Eastern men are now 14-17 in conference play as they wrapped up the regular season slate, falling victim to CSI in a four-game sweep. The Eagles suffered a 4-1 loss in the opening contest of the four-game set, then fell 8-1. On Saturday, they suffered a 7-5 and a 4-2 loss. USU Eastern will now prepare for the conference tournament. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
Hey, this is Nick Tropiano with the Anaheim Angels, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini. Here comes a comeback.
The kid is back, back on track, and everybody loves a comeback. We're back to talk some Major League Baseball here on Drive Time Sports. And again, it's kind of slowing down a little bit as far as the baseball front goes. I know we got to talk NFL and NBA a little bit later on. But every Monday, we are joined by Bill Lasky, former Major League pitcher. We recap some of the latest storylines in baseball. Bill, as always, a pleasure. Thank you.
Yes, sir. And boy, all I can tell you is the New York Yankees are hot, 9 in a row, and a big series coming up the front part of this week playing the Astros in Houston. So a surefire three-game series in Houston.
You know, I expected the Red Sox, and I think you and I have had conversations about this, Bill. I expected the Red Sox to run away with the AL East. So I was not surprised at the way Boston came out firing on all cylinders. I'm not going to say I was shocked at the Yankees' struggles early on in the season, but they didn't surprise me. But now, I mean, again, it looks like a two-pony race in the AL East, and I think this is what we're going to get throughout the year.
I believe so, too, and I got to watch them last night. Of course, ESPN had them on the game of the week against the Angels, and I really felt the Angels was a powerful offensive weapon, and boy, the Yankees just took it to them over the weekend, and surprised me a little bit, but at the same time, I'm with you. It's going to be Red Sox, Yankees, and I look at the Astros, you know, getting stronger as the year progresses, too. Garrett Cole, just a phenomenal pickup for them, and well, we'll just see how this race keeps continuing a third of the season into it.
Talk about the Yankees. I mean, Giancarlo Stanton, of course, is always going to be a hot topic. OBP right now of 323. How concerned are you with that? And do you think that now that things are starting to settle down, we're going to see that obviously rise, right? And this guy's going to get back on track to at least comparable to what he's been over the last couple of years with the Marlins?
No problem there. I feel that out. The same thing with Evan Longoria here. He started off 1-for-16, and now he's on fire, hitting about 270, 280, hit a home run yesterday. You know, the guys that have been around, sometimes change of scenery, of course, Miami to New York and Longoria, Tampa Bay to San Francisco, they come back to life, and I just think Stanton's going to be that kind of guy. It's just difficult jumping leagues, too. It's a whole different dynamic of pitchers. It is a different style, and both of them, you know, one from National League to American, one from American to National. I think it just takes time to get settled in with a new team and relax, and, you know, both these guys are all-stars. They'll figure it out. I think both of them are starting to figure it out as we get into, you know, 30, 40 games into it.
It's funny you mentioned going from National League to American League or vice versa, and I mean, even though New York's offense was pretty good in this series against the Angels, I believe Stanton only had three hits. Is it somewhat comparable to what Ken Griffey Jr. went through going from the Mariners to the Reds? And I bring that up because that's a familiar name that a lot of people are going to recognize or at least remember. He had struggles as well, Bill, when he went from the American League to the National League.
It's just difficult. It's a whole different type of a pitcher you're going to. And I say that even back in my era when American League was mostly breaking balls and National Leagues were fastball, I just think the pitchers pitch differently. The scouting reports are a little different. And you mentioned Griffey Jr. That's a perfect example, a guy that dominated when he was in Seattle. And when he went to Cincinnati, he struggled the first couple of years until he got on fire and a sure-shot Hall of Famer, as we know. But it's just a different animal when you're going into different leagues and different stadiums, different atmosphere, different team, the chemistry, all those things come into tack when in that first month of the season. And, you know, we always talk about the veteran player looking at different ways to improve. And you can watch so much video, you can do so much BP, but it's actually getting in that batter's box, as we always say, and seeing that live pitcher, seeing how he's going to come after me time and time again, as well as seeing how he's going to come after me the second time, the third time, with different array of pitches.
Again, we're being joined right now by Bill Lasky as we talk Major League Baseball. I want to stick with the AL East here for a moment. We talked about the two top teams. We can talk about the bottom dweller right now, and that's the Baltimore Orioles. They have not played good baseball, 8-20 up to this point in time, and the Manny Machado rumors are going to pick up. But I think they're going to get. I believe that Machado gets moved well before the deadline. I think it's something that Baltimore will get exactly what they want for him here relatively soon, and most of the teams that are rumored to make a play for him are coming out of the National League. I can see the Cubs, the Dodgers, the Diamondbacks, the Cardinals, the Phillies. Those are six or seven teams in the National League that made a play to try to get him this offseason. Bill, am I wrong in thinking that Machado will be on the move relatively soon?
You know, I just think, you know, we always talk about 40 to 50 games into the season, seeing how teams are united, seeing their chemistry. But, boy, the Orioles are just struggling big time offensively. Their pitching is not up to par. And he would be a hot name on the market right now. And you naming all those teams, and all those teams seem to have a very strong minor league system with some top quality players that could trade for him. Now, once again, once they trade him, is he going to sign a long-term contract with them, or is it going to be a rental player for a year? Because, as you know as well as I do, he's a free agent. So, you know, whoever does get him, they better have something in stone where he would sign a long-term agreement with them instead of just doing, you know, we'll give you four players for him, and then in 3 months' time he's back on the market. So there are a few things in line there, but, boy, every one of those teams that you talked about right there, everybody would take him in a second and put him right dead in the middle of their lineup, and he would succeed.
We spoke on a couple of National League teams that would be interested in Machado. I want to talk about the Dodgers because I got to get your perspective on Walker Buehler. He started twice already for this team. He's got one win, pitched 10 innings. I believe he's only given up two earned runs. What do you know about Walker Buehler, and what stands out to you?
Well, he pitched the first game of the doubleheader Saturday and threw the ball really hard, but had long innings. I think he threw like 39 pitches the first inning. Has good stuff, quality stuff. Of course, he had Tommy John surgery a couple years ago, so they're really watching him. But top prospect for the Dodgers, a player, or I should say a pitcher that's going to be in their rotation sooner or later. But they're really, really watching him attentively on pitches. He's only going like 70, 80 pitches max. And they're just trying to breed him in the Dodger organization and for that big league level. Top quality stuff. Had a good breaking ball through 95, you know, top 90. Just a good quality pitcher that's in their repertoire of pitchers in their minor leagues. And I'm looking for him to be successful as he continues his career.
You mentioned Tommy John surgery, and you're around the big league game. Is it almost viewed as a positive to have a young prospect who has already gone through Tommy John surgery?
It's tough. It's more mental fatigue. You know, Will Smith, who's in AAA now with the Giants, he'll be back with the big club this week. And I had a chance to talk to him. I was in Sacramento on Saturday, and we just kind of sat and talked. And he said the hardest thing to do was sit there and recover. And now that he's back in the minor leagues trying to get the 2 days in a row, he says the fatigue's there, but at the same time, his mental aspect of getting back to the big leagues to fire on that mound and to get that major league atmosphere back, he says he can't wait. But I think it's more mental fatigue. Is it going to come through? Is my arm going to come through? As we always hear the good ones. We always hear the ones that come back and, you know, pick up 2 or 3 miles an hour, but there's a few of them, and I say probably about 33% of them that are worse. They don't come back. The ligament doesn't come through, and they bounce around, and the velocity doesn't come back. So you always hear the good ones. You always hear the top-notch ones, but as I'm saying, there's some few Tommy John surgeries that the pitcher just does not recover.
Another prospect that we're finally getting to look at is Ronald Acuña for the Atlanta Braves. I've been excited to watch this guy in the bigs because of the anticipation and the buildup. 19 plate appearances so far. I think he's got 8 hits. He went yard once. He's got 4 doubles. I think he's taken like 15 total bases, Bill. Is he living up to the billing right out of the gate? I mean, those are fairly impressive stats.
Very impressive. And I watched him in Cincinnati, and I saw that a home run in the upper deck. Takes a hard hack at everything. Just a competitor, aggressive type hitter. The Giants see him next weekend in Atlanta. I'm anxious to see him, you know, time and time again. I keep an eye on the Braves, of course, as they're coming into, they're playing the Phillies and Pittsburgh after a 3-game series. So they're on the road facing 3 teams. And you talk about Atlanta superstars. They're playing good baseball. And, you know, a team that's got a lot of young players, but they're coming together and they're believing each other. And he's one guy that even through spring training, he had great numbers in spring training, went down to AAA and just blew it up. And now we're going to see it's a small sample size, as you say, you know, 19, 20 at-bats. So we're going to see if the scouting reports start changing the way pitchers go after him. And it's always, you know, you look at him and you get those advanced scouts back there watching holds and they're gonna you know, pretty much magnify that when the team comes in there and magnify the holes and try to get them to chase it and go back into that hole with they can see that could get them out. But boy, he has some star power. He's got a great arm. He's got a great whip and a bat. And I'm anxious to see how these young players come together with the Braves.
Yeah, look, I was talking to someone over the weekend who wasn't not a huge baseball fan. And I said, look, if you're wanting to watch a team that will present you some excitement offensively, watch the Atlanta Braves, because they have so much young talent. This team is going to be a force to be reckoned with within the next 3 years for a very long time if they keep everybody around.
And, you know, we talked about this a couple years ago when they were dead last and they made the changeover and they were trying to get youth and they were trying to trade and get all these young talent players. Well, here we are 2 years later, and here they are all in their early 20s. And they are playing well, and this is the team that they wanted going into that new stadium. So the Atlanta Braves and the Astros are two perfect teams where they dumped a salary and they dumped a lot of the long-term contracts, and they changed it, and all this youth is coming around. And, you know, that's the new makeup of baseball. That's the new makeup of getting young guys up there, signing them for 4 or 5 years, getting them through arbitration, and keeping them in a solid, unified team of youth and growing with them. So, you know, the Braves and the Astros, both teams come to mind immediately. And you look at the Phillies, too. The Phillies are playing very well. And it's just, I'm anxious to see how long this goes on. The Astros, for sure, since they won the World Series. But, again, how long will Atlanta stay in the middle of the pack and make a run? But that's what's great about baseball. You just never know who's hot and who's not. And who's going to run the gamut here, and who's going to stay in that division and try to succeed as the year continues.
We can end with your San Francisco Giants. They take 3 of 4 from the Dodgers, but at the end of the day, they lose Joe Panik. Could be out for a little while. I mean, we're talking possibly 2 months. How big of a loss is that for the Giants?
I think it's a bigger loss than they think right now. Kelby Tomlinson, of course, and Hanson, who they just brought up from AAA, played with a little bit with the White Sox. You know, they'll push different people in that hole, but Joe Panik was a leader, a gold glove player at second base. They had him leading off, of course, the first 2 games of the year, hit solo home runs to win 2 games. But I just look at that hole a little bigger than what Bruce Bochy's saying about, and he's probably going to be out maybe 6 weeks to 2 months. It looks like he's going to have surgery on the thumb. A very weird injury, a pickoff play at second base with a Puig going in, and they just kind of collided wrong, and the thumb kind of got bent back. They did an MRI on it yesterday. He's going for a second opinion down in L.A., but Bruce Bochy said it looks like it's going to be surgery, and he's going to be out. Madison Bumgarner on the other end got all the pins out. He's seeing a doctor today to see if he can start gripping a ball and starting to throw a baseball. So losing one and gaining one. I'm sure the Giants are going to be hurting at second base, but getting Madison back on the hill in another 4 weeks would be fantastic for that starting rotation. They're 12-12. They beat the Dodgers 3 out of 4. Dodgers are hurting. Their offense is scuffling, and the Giants are now playing a tough Padre team, which they've had trouble with the next 3 days. So anxious to see how this plays out, but if they can win today, it'd be great to be over 500 for the first month, especially how they struggled at the beginning of the year.
Of course, I have to ask you about Pablo Sandoval. Pitched a perfect inning.
It was real interesting. And to get hit, I think he threw 8 or 9 pitches.
Yeah.
Nice form. Everybody in both dugouts were laughing. He got a quick 1-2-3 inning. And of course, everybody saying, when is he going to get on the hill again? So, you know, when you're losing 15-4 and something comes out about that, it may have had enough laughter and joking that they got the win in the second game of that doubleheader. But the big panda on the hill with the belly shooting out there was pretty funny. And it was a good time at AT&T when he finished that game.
Bill Lasky, again, taking out the time to join us. Bill, please let the listeners know where they can find you.
Yeah, I'm at Twitter, at Lasky19, if you want to join me. I shoot some stuff out there, mainly about the Giants and the Rivercats now in AAA. So it's a fun follow for Giant fans out there as well as MLB fans. But again, thank you for inviting me on Mondays. It's a great time talking baseball with you especially, and hope your listeners enjoy it.
All right, Bill, we'll do it again next week. I really appreciate the time.
Excellent. Thank you again, my friend. Have a good week.
Again, that's Bill Lasky, former major league pitcher and now an analyst for the San Francisco Giants, taking out the time to join us for his weekly segment to go over Major League Baseball. We've got a break for just a moment. We have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ron Artest, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan. Say it again. Buscarini. All right. Jordan Buscarini. All right. With Jordan Buscarini. Shout out to Queens, Virginia right now.
Coming to you live from Price.
Put that cookie down.
Price, Utah.
Now.
Me and my man, Trav.
Yeah!
Love Price. Price is awesome.
Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini and Travis Anderson on KOAL AM 750. Eastern Utah's main source for local sporting news.
Let's talk NFL draft here on Drive Time Sports. I went by in a hurry this year. To my surprise, yeah, Baker Mayfield goes number one. I guess it shouldn't be a surprise because it's the Cleveland Browns, right? We talked about this on Thursday. But the Browns really take Baker Mayfield number one. They did.
They absolutely did. Cleveland had two of the first four picks. And in my eyes, I believe that they didn't get the best player at either position, at quarterback and at defensive back. So Cleveland found a way to screw it up in my mind.
They definitely didn't get the best defensive player.
No, you just can't. If you have two of the first four picks and you don't get the best players at that position, you have problems. That's why you're the Browns.
There's so many directions they could have gone. First off, the safest player in the draft, and we can agree on this, was Quentin Nelson, who ends up going to Indianapolis. So the Colts trade back. I think they get the best player in the draft. I get it. You shouldn't necessarily draft a guard in the top with the top pick or top three. I get that. I understand that. But we agree, he's the safest pick.
Safest pick, in my eyes, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. You have to protect your investment in Andrew Luck. So easily, Indianapolis wins with drafting Quentin Nelson.
Okay, he falls to six. I really wanted Nelson to go to the Broncos, but in regards to the Browns, they had a chance to protect their investment in Baker Mayfield at four, and they didn't. Instead, they go Denzel Ward. Now, if you wanted to go offense, defense, and again, there's so many scenarios that they could have went. Denzel Ward over Bradley Chubb?
I would never have done that. I would have taken Bradley Chubb. If you're going to go on the defensive end at four, you have to take Bradley Chubb. It makes most sense with him and Myles Garrett.
Complimenting Myles Garrett. Now, I was looking at reasons as to why Cleveland did this. First off, did they make a mistake by not taking Barkley number one?
I believe that they probably did, yes, because you could have got a quarterback at four.
Okay. I think we agree on that.
Yeah.
Who knows what the Giants do at two if Barkley goes off the board at one? We have no idea. So they would have gotten a quarterback. At the very minimum, they're getting Josh Allen number four if they go Barkley number one. Okay. They did acquire some really interesting weapons. Nick Chubb, Antonio Callaway. I like Callaway. He does come with some off-the-field problems. On the field, he's productive. But aside from this, Chubb would have made more sense. I know that Ward, look, they could have traded down to get Ward. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, you could absolutely trade down to get Denzel Ward. I just don't understand taking Ward at four. If Ward was your guy, you should move down and accumulate more picks because you could have got him. Because no one was going to draft Ward, I don't believe, in the top, what, eight or nine?
Eight or nine, yeah. But apparently that's who they wanted. They got their two guys. Okay, we'll see how that pans out. The Giants. How did you grade the Giants draft?
I think the Giants got an A. I think the Giants did really well. You're going to live with Eli Manning for the next 3 to 4 years. You didn't like the quarterbacks really in this draft, so you get Saquon Barkley, who offensively, he's probably the best player in the draft. I'm going to say he's probably the best player in the draft. So they got their guy at two, and they were leaning towards Saquon Barkley the whole time. So they didn't have to trade, move pieces around. They got their guy.
I had someone tell me that they believe Saquon Barkley is Marshall Faulk-esque.
Has all the talent or the attributes to be like Marshall Faulk, yeah, but Marshall Faulk was a stud, maybe one of the best of all time.
And I think some people view Saquon Barkley in that same category.
I don't think he catches out of the backfield as good as Marshall Faulk did.
Well, Faulk
and
was
no one
he
will.
Was basically a receiver.
I mean,
but there are three. I mean, really, when I look at what the Giants did outside of Barkley, they added two talented linemen for a new 3-4 defensive scheme. They got B.J. Hill and they got R.J. McIntosh. I really think those were two very good value picks. Yeah, you know what? I'll go ahead and give the Giants an A. I think they did the best that they could have possibly have done. They did better than Cleveland.
Yeah, I gave Cleveland probably a C-.
Jets at number three. What do you give them?
I give them an A. Sam Darnold fell right into their laps. The safest pick in the draft, I believe. Sam Darnold, best quarterback prospect in the draft. This doesn't happen to a team like the Jets. After 45 years, the football gods finally gave the Jets a break.
Here's why I'm not extremely high on what the Jets did this draft. Because, yes, they did get Darnold. To me, a disaster scenario would have been Mayfield at number three. They get Darnold at three. I think that works out. But because they had to trade up to get him, they really didn't have the options to load up around him.
They need offensive line help. They need a wide receiver. So, yeah, they traded back those two twos or whatever to move up, and they didn't really address their needs at that point.
So, for Jet fans, you have to view this as almost like a 3 to 4 year deal. Like, this is a process that starts with you getting a quarterback of the future. Now it's going to take a couple of years to put options around him.
Yep, that's what the Jets are doing. So they got the need, they got the quarterback that they wanted, and Cleveland, with the domino effect, just handed Sam Darnold to the Jets.
Denver, what do you give them?
I give them an A. How could you not? Bradley Chubb to compliment Von Miller. Bradley Chubb, best defensive player in the draft. Cleveland messes up by not taking him, and he falls right into Denver's lap.
Yeah, I agree. Best player in the draft, or defensive player in the draft, hands down. I think this has the intangibles. This has the makings of being Miller Ware all over again with Miller Chubb.
Yep, I am with you 100%. So there was a lot of talk maybe Denver would try to maybe draft a quarterback, and then after, you know, Cleveland kind of passed on Chubb, there's no way that Denver could pass on him. You can't.
They were also able, they managed to pick up Cortland Sutton, second round. Love it. Don't know that he fits in immediately, but he is going to be a starter for the Broncos years down the road.
Yeah, they're building this defense how they won that Super Bowl a few years ago with, you know, they're going to get average quarterback play, but they're going to win on the defensive side of the football.
I think Josie Jewell probably could have gone in the early in the second day. Value pick. I think you can say the same thing about Deshaun Hamilton, so I'm with you. I give the Broncos an A. I thought they had a tremendous draft.
I'm with you. A for the Denver Broncos as well.
Colts.
I give them an A because you got a Hall of Famer. I mean, Quentin Nelson's a Hall of Famer. Safe. You gotta protect Andrew Luck because, again, are we going to see Andrew Luck? We don't know about his health. Hasn't really tossed a football, but if he's back and healthy, you have to protect him. So Quentin Nelson's a safe pick. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame. He's going to give you 12 to 15 years.
If we're basing this off of one pick, they get an A. If I'm basing this off of their entire selection, it probably falls down in the C category for me, and I'll tell you why. Because after they drafted Quentin Nelson, their next four selections were used on an offensive lineman and front seven players. Braden Smith at 37, when the Colts have three quality guards, did not make sense to me. After that, they have a 4-3 defensive scheme. I don't know that the Colts necessarily drafted for need. More or less, they took who they feel were the best players available. Made some decent picks in the middle. I think outside of Quentin Nelson, it's a stretch for me to give them a B.
B minus.
Okay, I can buy that.
I'll go B minus because the Quentin Nelson pick is going to hold that up to a B minus.
Just that pick, it's an A. Yeah, I think we can agree on that.
That pick's an A. Other than that, you're going to drop down to a B minus.
Tampa Bay, they went in. They really wanted Quentin Nelson.
They did.
And when he was off the board, they traded down five spots with Buffalo. Derwin James, a popular player that was mocked to them, was still available at 12. Instead, they went away. They went a different direction. They went to upgrade with Vita Vea. So, I mean, all in all, for Tampa, their guy was off the board. They decided to move down. Otherwise, it would have been Quentin Nelson at 7.
Yeah, I'll give Tampa a B, B minus. Not sure how they could have moved up to get Quentin Nelson, but they didn't. So I'll give them a B, B minus.
Chicago.
I like what Chicago did. I'll give them a B plus.
I give them an A. Again, I think this is a team that would have liked to have had Quentin Nelson because you're looking for a safe pick at that particular spot. But I thought they did fine. I thought Ryan Pace did fine. I mean, Roquan Smith, close second for me as far as best defensive players in this draft. They got him at number 8. I thought they did fine there. Arguably the top defensive player outside of Chubb. I don't think anyone's going to argue with you there. Outside of that, their next two picks, they helped bolster Mitch Trubisky. And I preach this on Thursday. You have to. You have to compliment last year's previous pick when it's high. James Daniels, I thought, was a steal. He's an upgrade on the offensive line. Anthony Miller is going to be a great replacement for Cameron Meredith. I thought the Bears did great. I give him an A. I thought the Bears had a terrific draft.
Yeah, Bears did good.
Number 9, San Francisco.
Not sure what the Niners are doing. I didn't like their pick at 9. I'm going to give them a C.
Didn't like McGlinchey.
Didn't like it. Thought there was other routes that they should have probably went.
Okay, so when they moved Trent Brown out, you bring in Mike McGlinchey, it's a lateral move. So I don't know that you get any better.
Yeah, it's just, if it didn't make sense, really.
A lot of people have McGlinchey falling out of the top 20.
Yeah, and maybe San Francisco, they probably could have moved back, got some more picks, and probably still got him.
Oakland at 10, what do you give them?
B minus.
Would you like?
I like their later round picks. I didn't like their first round pick.
Colton Miller?
Yeah.
That's a primary complaint for a lot of Raider fans.
Yeah.
Ravens wanted him at 16.
Yeah, and the Raiders reached. So later round picks, I think they did fine.
Third, fourth, and fifth rounds.
Yeah, they addressed what they needed, but their first round pick, no.
We've got a break for just a moment. Again, running short on this segment. We'll pause for just a second, come back, and talk more Drive Time Sports right after this.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Beagles.
We're back to put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports. And if things weren't bad enough for the NL reigning NL champion Dodgers, Corey Seager is now out for the season. This was breaking news just a couple of minutes ago. This isn't good for the Dodgers.
No, going to have Tommy John surgery on that right forearm area. So, yeah, he's out for the year. So, big blow to the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Huge. Huge. Dodgers, are they in trouble?
They might be. They might be. Again, the same kind of problems they had last year with trying to score runs with runners in scoring position. And now you're out Seager. Justin Turner's still out. Pitching-wise, you know, they haven't looked the same.
Okay, let me ask you this. We talked about this with Bill Lasky, and I do want to jump back over and talk some more football before we close out the show. But we talked to Lasky about this earlier on in the show. Manny Machado, does he now become an option for the Dodgers? Do the Dodgers look to Baltimore and try to get something done, knowing that there is now a hole at shortstop?
I would. I would try to get that guy. You got a lot of young talent in your farm system that you can make the move. You can absorb his contract. You know you can pay him. So, yeah, I think the Dodgers have to go get Manny Machado now.
Look, the Cubs seem to be the front runner to acquire him. If I'm the Dodgers, I'm throwing everything in the kitchen sink at him right now. Puig is on the DL. Seager's out for the rest of the year. It's not good in L.A. right now. Justin Turner has yet to play a game. Yeah, it's not good. We were talking about NFL draft grades. Let me ask you this. Who won the draft? Because unfortunately, we don't have the time to go through every single team. Who won the draft?
I like Chicago. I really like what Chicago did. I'm going to say that the Bears won the draft.
Okay, you told me that Buffalo did not. You do not like what Buffalo did trading up to get Josh Allen. I want your thought. I want to know why. Why don't you like Josh Allen?
I think his problems are not correctable. The inaccuracy that he has, his completion percentage at the JUCO level is about 49%. You go to Wyoming, around 50%. I just think that he misses a lot of throws, and those are things that you can't correct.
Josh Rosen, Arizona?
I think Josh Rosen in Arizona is a perfect fit. The injury issues for me are probably the only concern with Josh Rosen, but I think he's going to be a very good quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals.
Can I tell you who I think may have won the draft?
Which team?
I think Green Bay.
Green Bay did very well, accumulating a lot of picks and drafted well. So, yeah, the Packers addressed all their needs for a run.
Won pretty much every trade that I think they were a part of. Secondary is atrocious for Green Bay. I think that they did very well. They helped out their Jair Alexander and Joshua Jackson. Those are huge upgrades. I think Green Bay did very well. I think that I can go ahead and mention Green Bay. I don't know if they
got
won
Burks.
It.
You got Burks in the third round, too.
Right, right. They did very, very well. I don't know. To me, it's probably close. I'm going to go ahead and say that Green Bay, I'll throw Denver in that category.
Denver did good.
There's no reason why Cleveland should not have won the draft.
Chargers had a very good draft, too.
Chargers did fine. You know what? For not having any picks in the first two rounds, I thought the Rams did okay.
I thought the Rams did okay, too. I think Miami did okay.
Miami did fine. Carolina is another team that I think you could probably throw in there in the category of potentially winning the draft. They were fantastic. They had a great draft throughout the first 2 days. Day three, they got a huge athletic tight end in Ian Thomas. I think he's going to be awesome with Greg Olsen, who is towards the end of his career as well. Give the Panthers an A+. Those are the teams that I would say did the best.
Washington did fine, too, I think.
They were okay.
Yeah,
Washington were okay.
Yeah, Washington got some players later in the rounds that if it pans out, you can give them an A if it turns out in a few years as those players.
Sneakily, I thought the Falcons were okay as well.
So a lot of teams did well, and a lot of teams not so well.
Let me tell you who did not do well. New Orleans did not do well.
Yeah, New Orleans, ugh.
I go through and I look at what they have, what they did, and one player that really made sense. Why did they pass on Lamar Jackson?
Not sure. And they traded, what, from 27 to 14 to get Davenport. That was that's a terrible move.
I didn't quite understand New Orleans. I thought they had a horrible draft. I thought the Jaguars were fine as I schemed through and I take a look at the draft grades that I accumulated. I thought the Patriots did fine. The Eagles did fine. We did talk about the Patriots moving a couple of assets to move up in the draft and get a quarterback. They didn't have to do that. They didn't do that in the first round. They stayed pat. I thought they were fine.
They prime themselves next year if they want to move up with all the twos and threes they have now.
Right, exactly. So to me, it was a draft. I'm going to throw Seattle towards the bottom. Didn't like what the Seahawks did.
That's a reach at the running back position.
18th overall pick. Team shifted to 27. Crucial third-round pick in the process is what they picked up. Sure, they did a couple of nice things. Penny was, to me, it's a reach. I see potential there, but outside of Rasheem Green, I'm going to say the Seahawks and the Saints, I put them at the bottom.
Me too. I mean, I think if you were going to draft a running back for the Seattle Seahawks, I mean, Sony Michel was probably a better option.
I agree. Out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. It's always fun to catch up with you. We had to rush this program a little bit today. We'll be back tomorrow to do it again. We'll talk some NBA basketball. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. Be safe. We're out.